Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 18, which is entitled Diti Vows to Kill King Indra, text number 31 to 34. So I will read first 31, 32, and then the verse on the board is 34. 33 and 34 are together. Evam susrushitastata bhagavan kashyapastriya prahasya parama prito ditim aha binandyakcha. O my dear one, the most powerful sage Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. Sri Kashyapa Vacha Paramvaraya Vamoru Pritasteham Anindite Striya Bhartari Suprite Kaha Kama Iha Chagamaha. Kashyapa Muni said, O beautiful women, O irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? Text 33. Patir eva inarinam daivatam paramam smritam manasa sarva bhutanam Vasudeva Sriyapati. Text 34. Saeva Devata Linger Namarupa Vikalpitai Ichyate Bhagavan Pumbi Stribhischa Patirupadrik Saiva Devata Linger Namaru Pavikalpitai Idjate Bhagavan Pumbi Stribhischa Patirupadrik Saiva Devata Linger Namarupa Vikalpitai Vijate Bhagavan Pumbi Stribhischa Patirupadrik.
Yeah.
strategies. Pati, the husband. Eva, indeed. He, certainly. Narina, of women. Devatam, demigod. Paramam, supreme. Smritam is considered. Manasa, situated in the heart. Sarvabhutanam, of all living entities. Vasudeva, Vasudev. Sriya, of the goddess of fortune. Patihi, the husband. Saha, he. Eva, certainly. Devatalinge, by the forms of the demigods. Nama, names. Rupa, forms. Vikalpitai, conceived. Ijyate, is worshipped. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kumbhi, by man. Stribhi, by women. Cha, also. Patirupadrik, in the form of the husband. So Kashyapu Muni continues to speak by saying, a husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruitive workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Please repeat. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruitive workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:23, Yepi anya devata bhakta yajante sradayantita tepi mam eva kanteya yajanti avidhi purvakam. Translation: whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women, who are usually very much attached to their husbands, worship their husbands as representatives of Vasudev, the women benefit. Just as Ajamil benefited by calling for Narayan, his son. Ajamil was concerned with his son, but because of his attachment to the name of Narayan, he attained salvation simply by chanting that name. In India, a husband is still called Pati Guru, the husband's spiritual master. If husband and wife are attached to one another for advancement in Krishna consciousness, their relationship of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, in Indraya Svaha, Agnaye Svaha, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Om Agyanati Mahabhasha Ganaya Shlakaya Shakshur Militam Yena Tasma Shigurave Namah Namah Vismadai Krishna Stadadadir Shimati Satsvarid Dasva Swami Tinamne Namah Vismadai Krishna Pistai Mutadir Shimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tinamne Namaste Sarasvati Devi Oravani Pracharine Nirvishe Sat Sunyavadi Paschatya Vizatati. So here we are in the chapter where Diti makes a vow, an internal conviction that she built up to kill Lord Indra. Diti was one of the wives of Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni, he married 13 daughters of Prajapati Daksha. And Diti and Aditi were the two oldest daughters. And Aditi children were like devotees, like demigods, but Diti's children were like demons. And we know that the reason is that Kashyapa Muni warned her that when she wanted a progeny, it was at the wrong time. But she was impatient and she really wanted to have sexual intercourse with her husband at that time. She was impatient, she didn't want to wait. And then as a result, two demons were born, and that, of course, gave some problems, as it was announced by Kashyapa Muni. So Hiranyaksha, he created quite some disturbance in the universe, bringing the earth down to the causal ocean. And then the demigods, of course, they were very much disturbed. And then the Lord interfered and killed Hiranyaksha. And then similarly with Hiranyakasipu, he also did such great austerity that he overheated the universe, and the demigods were very uncomfortable in their, because the whole universe became intolerably to live by his great austerities. So then again, you know, Lord Brahma interfered, and then later, in order to protect his the son Prahlad, the Lord again interfered and killed Hiranyakasipu. So then, of course, Diti was very much disturbed by that, and she knew it was difficult to revenge towards Lord Vishnu. So then she wanted to take revenge against Lord Indra, although difficult, but a little more easy than to take it up against Lord Vishnu. So then she started to, you know, meditate on that, revenge, and due to some envious nature that she had, then that built up a very strong desire. Just like when we want to achieve something, then even if there are some difficulties, if our desire is strong, then we can overcome difficulties, we can handle some austerities, because we want something very strong. And that's why in the material world so many people are materially successful, because they know what they want and they are willing to work hard and they are willing to do whatever is necessary, handle whatever difficulties come on their path. Unfortunately, it's for material reasons, so unfortunately it binds them stronger and deeper to the material world. So so as we heard yesterday when Devaki Mataji spoke, women can be very powerful. So also Diti was powerful in that sense. And there are examples like that. Even in the previous chapter, Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva. And especially when we look at the example of the Ramayana, where Dasarath Maharaj, who had a very successful kingdom and was very powerful king, a very exemplary king, then he unfortunately had one wife, one of the three wives, that had helped him in the war. He had, she had helped him very much. And in that particular occasion, then King Dasarath, he told her, you know, you can have any boon you want. And and that happened on two occasions. So she had two boons. But she said, it's fine, I don't need anything now. I will ask you at the right time, when I need it. So then, you know, time went by, and then when King Dasarath was at a certain age, and Lord Ramachandra was at a mature age, then he wanted to give his kingdom to Lord Ramachandra and the whole kingdom. Everybody was very happy and joyful, and all the festivities, everything was in great preparation, the greatest festival ever, because Lord Ramachandra was so much liked by everybody. He was, you know, because he was, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's one thing, but everybody liked him so much. And then, just because, you know, the wife of Dasarath, Kaitei, was ill-advised by Mantara, then the whole thing changed suddenly. And, you know, she told her husband, the king, that, you remember, you know, once you gave me two boons, so I want to get these boons now. And he said, of course, no problem. You know, I promised it, and I will stick to my promise. And then she came with these two boons that my son Bharat will become the king, and that Lord Ramachandra goes in exile for 14 years. So this was such a shock for Dasarath. You know, how can anybody in the world, you know, come up with, at that time, with such requests, with such demands? Because King Dasarath was known for keeping his word, for being very truthful, being very, you know, all the good qualities of a Vedic king. So, but she was persistent, you know, she had made up her mind, and as it said that women can be very powerful, she simply sticked to her request. She didn't budge, whatever the king said or pleaded, that was it. So here also, Diti, you know, driven by some of that, some envy, she also made up her plan, and energy was building up, and she was serving her husband very nicely, but with a plan in the back of her mind. She was serving very nicely, she was doing whatever was required to please him. And then we came to the point, the verses of today, where she's actually, where Kashyapa Muni is expressing, you know. He said, oh beautiful woman, oh irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benedictions you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? Especially when you have a powerful husband, like Kashyapa Muni. So in this way, you know, she Diti got what she desired. And of course the whole pastime continues and turns actually very, very positive in this particular case, because Kashyapa Muni finds a solution to, you know, to bring that negative energy or that envy into, you know, purifying the envy and engaging her in devotional service, by which she develops Vaishnava qualities. And so in that sense, you know, she's very very lucky that takes such a beautiful turn in this pastime. And Srila Prabhupada, in one purport, he says, a woman's nature has been particularly well studied by Kashyapa Muni. Women are self-interested by nature, and therefore they should be protected by all means, so that their natural inclination to be too self-interested will not be manifested. Women need to be protected by men. A woman should be cared for by her father in her childhood, by her husband in her youth, and by her grown-up sons in her old age. This is the injunction of Manu, who says that a woman should not be given independence at any stage. Women must be cared for so that they will not be free to manifest their natural tendency for gross selflessness. There have been many cases, even in the present day, in which women have killed their husbands to take advantage of their insurance policies. And so Prabhupada, he almost excuses himself. He says, this is not a criticism of women, but a practical study of their nature. He softens it a little bit. Such natural instincts of a woman or a man are manifested only in the bodily conception of life. When either a man or a woman is advanced in spiritual consciousness, the bodily conception of life practically vanishes. We should see all women as spiritual units, aham brahmasmi, whose only duty is to satisfy Krishna. Then the influences of the different modes of material nature, which result from one's possessing a material body, will not act. The Krishna consciousness movement is so beneficial that it can very easily counteract the contamination of material nature, which results from one's possessing a material body. So basically, Sri Prabhupada is saying that these are the, you know, inherent material qualities of, in this particular case, of women, also for men, but women in particular, here is the example, but they are coming from the misconception of I am the body. So, in other words, he is saying that the process of Krishna consciousness takes care of this misconception. It's a very deeply rooted misconception, and we all are victim of that misconception, but we can all be cured of that misconception by the process of Krishna consciousness. And then in the verse of today, this verse basically says that just like fruitive workers, they are inclined to serve the demigods. But actually the demigods are representatives of the Lord. So it's like an indirect approach of the Lord. Which in general is not our way to do. In the process of Bhakti Yoga, we are advised to directly approach the Lord, not indirectly. But here in this verse, spoken by Kashyapa Muni, he says that fruitive workers, they are rather inclined to approach the demigods, because the demigods can give something in return quickly, something, you know, quick result. While the Lord will, we will have to invest ourselves more, and he may not give the result we like, because he will give what is best for us. While the demigods may give what we want, but it is not for our ultimate best. And then Sri Prabhupada refers in that to the Bhagavad Gita 9:23. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. Because there is a direct connection between the demigods and the Lord. But that understanding is not there. Because, you know, people, fruitive workers, they want direct result. And, you know, Krishna consciousness is a lifetime investment. It's not something, you know, you invest now and immediately you get result. And people in the mode of passion, they want direct result. But they will not get it, even through the demigods, they will not get it. So, yeah, Srila Prabhupada compares it, we know, like watering the leaves and not watering the root. Demigod worship is like watering the leaves, but unless you water the root, the tree is not going to survive. Because just like, you know, you can put an apple in your hand or put it on your leg or whatever, or kichuri, or you can put it in front, but unless you take it to the stomach, then, you know, the whole body is not going to be satisfied. Body will only be satisfied when it goes to when the prasadam goes to the stomach, because the stomach then brings it to all other places. So when we satisfy Krishna, then all the demigods are satisfied. And we ourselves are also satisfied because we have done the right thing. So the right thing to do is to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to take up Krishna consciousness. But still, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says that as long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. Let's see, Srila Prabhupada makes that as a closing statement of that purport after explaining what is the right thing to do. The right thing to do is to offer the fruits of our activities to the Supreme Lord. The right thing to do is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, glorify His name and do austerities to please Him and His devotees. That is the right process. But, Srila Prabhupada concludes the statement by, as long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of demigods or worship of one's husband is recommended. In order to come to a level of understanding that the right thing to do is to take up bhakti yoga. That is ultimately the meaning of that explanation. So I wanted to stop here. Any comments, any questions? Then we will stop. So Prabhupada, please go ahead.
Hare Krishna, small question, Prabhu, thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Regarding that last comment, or the closing part of the purport that you just mentioned, I'm trying to understand the principle here. As you mentioned, when a non-devotee comes to the platform of bhakti, he gives up the worship of demigods, or it's no longer recommended. And we in ISKCON say this publicly, especially in countries like, for example, India, where there's worship of demigods. We say once you come to Krishna consciousness, you don't have to worship demigods anymore, regardless of how attached you are to sense gratification. In other words, we don't tell people, when you become really advanced in Krishna consciousness, then you may give up the worship of your whatever village demigod, or immediately from the very beginning worship Krishna and Krishna alone. And yet in this last sentence, Srila Prabhupada combines giving up the worship of demigods in favor of just Krishna with also the giving up of, for example, a wife serving her husband. So that principle, is it so that when one comes to Krishna consciousness, or when one is no longer so attached to sense gratification, one gives up, for example, the service of a wife to her husband, or for example, the service of a disciple to his or her guru, or Vaishnava Seva in general? No, right? I mean, my understanding is no. And yet Prabhupada in this sentence combines in that same analogy the giving up of worship of demigods with the giving up of service in this example of a husband, I mean of a wife to her husband. So I was wondering if you could speak on this a little bit. Thank you.
Yeah, as far as I understand, I mean the husband and wife, there is always a relationship of service is there. So it's not that when we are progressing Krishna consciousness or take up the path of bhakti yoga, that then there is not no need anymore to serve. I mean, in one sense, it's serving its other, but the there are roles to play. So then the wife, even if we are in the, on the path of Bhakti Yoga, the wife still serves the husband, but within the realm of Bhakti Yoga, and the husband has received the task to guide both of them, make sure that both of them are going into the direction of becoming more Krishna conscious, so that task remains. It's not that falls away as such. Just that Prabhupada is speaking here about people who are too attached to the material energy in order to take up the process of Krishna consciousness, then in order for them to come more in goodness, then it is advised to, or it can be a way to as it's said here, that, you know, in a more, to come out of this material realm. But even if we come into the Krishna consciousness, because that's the way how it was before, and in some places it's still like that from one day to the other, you are in a temple, then, I mean, we are then in the temple with our material attachments, obviously, you know, when you come from the material world, then there is a lot to learn when we start the process of Krishna consciousness. But we are on the path, and we are on the, and gradually, you know, we get opportunities to gradually become free from our material entanglement, and we are encouraged to do so in the association of the devotees. But it's not that when we step from the street in the temple that suddenly we are there, you know, free of material attachment. It's still a lifetime process. As we all who are around a little longer, we all have realized by now that the process of Krishna consciousness is a process that takes many years. Anybody else? Yes? Who? Is the mic around?
Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for explaining wonderfully. Just one point, by your kind permission, I would like to add in the same shloka which you quoted about the watering the root and the watering the leaves and different things. So the purpose of our Krishna consciousness is, we appreciate Srila Prabhupada's emphatic emphasis on the exclusive worship of Krishna. So one may argue that, because a person who has been worshipping, because for whatever reason the demigods and other worships, and when one comes to the exclusive worship of Krishna, then one say, oh, what is wrong in worshipping the devatas? And so I will also worship Krishna and also the demigods. So the question I think we are discussing, but in the second line of that shloka, it describes, as you said, if you put the food in the eyes, is a limb, then one will get the blindness. And if one puts the food in the ear, one will become deaf. And if the nose wants to smell something wonderful, if the food is put, then he may die. So there is a specific danger when one comes to pure Krishna consciousness. You still cling on to the worship of anyone else compared to the service, like service to the husband. in other people. So service and worship, because in the mode of worship, a person is thinking that the deity he is worshipping is God. But Krishna emphasized that Krishna is the only Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is a difference between worship and service. Service to all, we serve everybody. Our constitutional position is service, but when it comes to worship, worship is exclusively devoted to Krishna and Hare Krishna.
Thank you. It's going in another time. Yes, Lakshmi. You go ahead, Mataji.
Just a thought to what he was saying. On this purple, do you know?
It's not on.
Okay. Is that in the Vedas, in the Vedic way of doing things, the idea is that by worshipping the demigods, one associates with yajna. And by associating with yajna, one also hears prayers to Vishnu and comes in contact with the mode of goodness and makes spiritual advancement. And by associating with or serving a good husband, then also that inclination will be there to bring you closer to Krishna, to the ultimate goal of human life. That's what a good husband does. So the intention in both things is to elevate one. When I think in that purport, the understanding when Prabhupada says when one is too attached to material sense gratification. So, I mean, as is in this purport, as in this verse, Diti had ulterior motives, as you mentioned. She wasn't worshipping Kasyapa to get to Krishna. She was worshipping Kasyapa to kill Indra. And so her whole thing was calculated. And people who worship the demigods generally are worship. It is also calculated. I want a new DVD and a house by the sea, Swaminjai Jagadisha Hari, you know. So the intention is mundane, and somehow or other the Vedic methodology tricks us to take that mundane intention and direct it in such a way that it will be elevated. But if one is already coming in contact with Krishna through the spiritual master, then everything has to go in that direction. Everything has to be attached to worshiping Krishna. So if we serve our husband, then our husband has the responsibility also of directing that energy to Krishna, because that's his job. And our job, you know, as a wife, if that's what we are, is to, you know, do our part in that equation, but it's all meant to come to that ultimate conclusion.
Thank you very much for your comment. We will stop here, we are over time. So Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Radha Madhava ki jai, Shri Pancha Tattva ki jai, Gaur Premanande.